joining me today on the Culture Catch, the king of contemporary dance, Mr. Mark Morris, next on the Culture Catch. Today's podcast is brought to you by WebHSP.com. For all of your web hosting needs, it's WebHSP.com. And our friends at Final Draft. If you've got a script, they've got a solution. If you've got a script to write, FinalDraft.com is the answer. FinalDraft.com. Joining me today on the Culture Catch, Mr. Mark Morris from the Mark Morris Dance Group. And I said that stumbling again. Mm-hmm. See, I'm nervous. You are a leader in this field.
Yes, it's not. Yeah, there are. It's not a very big field, so you know there aren't that many leaders.
Why is that? Why do you think dance is committed to a subgenre, and everyone loves to dance? It's one of the freest forms of expression. Yet, there seems to be. Is it hard? Is it hard to maintain a center?
Well, here's the thing. Liking to dance and having a freedom of expression in dancing around, dancing socially, dancing individually, is a very, very much different thing from having a concert performing dance company, which is what I have. So the trouble with dance companies in general is that there aren't very many, most of them aren't very good, and dance is a very tiny subset of, I like to think of music, although I suppose it's a subset of the performing arts. So really, there are very few dance companies that work all the time, and there are a lot of wonderful dancers with not much to do, and there's not a very big audience, so that's what I'm saying. It's easy to be a leader of something that isn't very big.
But why is it that, you know, I don't know, maybe this is a bigger question about culture in America anyway. Why is there such a resistance to accept this form of culture when music or something else is so disposable and readily consumed by audiences, by patrons?
I'm not sure. I don't know why. There's not much dancing in general. There's a lot more dancing sort of still in African-American culture and in there's not a lot other than that socially. There's a little bit of social dancing that everyone does singly, but there's very little dancing. You know, you go to a wedding and nobody knows how to dance anymore.
Oh, it's sad.
And you, right. And you go to a concert, to a show to see dancing, and there's very little of it, and it's usually not very high quality. So it's seen, I don't know, it's still seen as sort of a hobby or sort of something that isn't of great import. And unfortunately, I see that often to be true.
Is it hard to maintain an equilibrium? Obviously, you guys put over 100 dances a year, correct? Or something like that, 90 to 100?
We perform, we're on the road about 6 months of the year performing,
right.
So a lot.
With live music, which
always
is
with live
unbelievable.
Music,
yeah. You know, mm-hmm. That in itself is a logistic nightmare, it must be.
Well, but that's also the reason that my shows are so good. I'm a very good choreographer. That's not the problem. The problem is that it's perceived to be a luxury to have living musicians playing for you, which, of course, you do. That's what music is. So dance companies are very often used to and settle for taped music or canned music, which is fine if that's how it's written. But I work in chamber music primarily, and so it's urgent that I have my own musicians who play for me, because otherwise it's half a show. It's not complete.
You know, maybe we should have started with this question. How did you come upon dance? What were your earliest influences? What was it for you that resonated deep in your soul that said, you know, this is something I'm drawn to artistically and not another area of the arts?
There was always music and dancing around in my house my parents were both interested in music, and I don't know. I had friends who were folk dancers, and I started doing that. I first started studying dance when I was about 9, I think, and I started with Spanish dance. And in fact, that's what I did almost exclusively for a while. And I was a very good Spanish dancer, flamenco and jota and various styles of Spanish dance. And then I added different kinds of modern dance and ballet technique study, which is still, you know, to this day, the technique that I teach my company. And I guess probably it's mostly because I've kept doing this because of my affiliation with music and my very deep affection for music. So I choreograph in order to work with music, and that's what I found about probably 97% of culture of the world, people dance to music and to rhythm, and it's only in the United States and only since the last like 30 or 40 years that it's become an embarrassment to dance with music. There was a whole movement to divorce dancing from music, and I never went along with that.
In the modern sense or in the classical or both in dance?
In what would be called modern dance or minimalist dance or postmodern dance or what you will. Also, that happened with opera. Dance fell away from opera, and I've been reinstating it in that department too because I work in opera with some frequency. So, and I'm not defending the right to for bad dance to exist. It's just that there isn't much, and there isn't much of an opportunity for people to come in contact with dancing through watching it or through doing it, and that's one reason I have a giant school here, is so that people can do that.
Well, more than that, you've also have this outreach to the community, which is extraordinary, and mm-hmm. that in itself must be another whole agenda. And I mean, talk about a man who is busy 24/7. Do you ever get to enjoy yourself and dance for fun?
I enjoy myself, but I rarely dance for fun. You know, it's like I rarely listen to the music I work with for fun after a while. But, you know, I'm still fluent in a lot of folk dancing. I can go someplace and get drunk and dance with people easily. But mostly, I'm working on new projects and keeping this building going, although I don't have much to do with the school except I approve it and I know everybody and I see all these fabulous kids all over the place. And it's not a conservatory. It's not designed just to get people to dance in my company. It is so that people have an experience of dancing. And you mentioned outreach before, which is a word I don't like very much, but it's the one we use. And we are supplying schools in Brooklyn and wherever we go on tour the opportunity to dance, to have an exposure to dancing, which doesn't happen because, of course, as we know, there's zero arts education in public schools, which is
and very, physical education too.
And physical education. Yeah. It's very, very dangerous for the society. So we do what we can to sort of counteract that.
What would be a better word than using outreach to be more uplifting? And
no, I don't mind education.
Education. Okay.
I'm all for the education.
Yeah. Does outreach have it must have like a negative connotation or?
Well,
like,
to me, it's, you know, it's like saying inner city youth as secret code for black kids.
Got you. Okay.
Really. So outreach means, you know, it's a ghetto thing, sort
right,
of,
right.
And not in the glamorous sense. So, to me, you know, it's automatically is underprivileged, but you can be an underprivileged rich kid who has no culture in her life, you know. So to me, that's underprivileged. Of course, if you don't have money, that's another thing. Or
right.
You can't feed yourself, that's another.
Right.
But really, and you know, dance is no substitute for food, but really a lively culture that includes many different art experiences is urgently necessary, I think.
Sure, I would agree. And, you know, it's to your credit, thank you for helping the community. I mean, a lot of people wouldn't even risk that their neck to the chopping block, mm-hmm. if you would, especially given the climate of everything being cut, funded, you know, all the great programs that used to be funded mm-hmm. get cut every year in this administration.
Well, the thing is, we didn't know what was going to happen when we moved here and built this building in Fort Greene. And it turned out, as soon as we started offering classes, they were full, and then there were more that were full. And the preponderance of our students are, like, probably 7 to 12 years old. They're kids, and their parents come here. Most of the neighborhood is of Caribbean descent, and, you know, there are all these fabulous little kids who are coming and dancing and really are proud of it and very, very engaged and excited. You know, it's a wonderful, fun, interesting, challenging situation for them, and we love it. You know, so we have like 500 students now, and it's great. And they're, you know, it's not a military academy, but you know, there's discipline and there's respect and there's fun and there's rigor. And that's what, something that you don't get with an automatic education.
Well, there's a structure that they also can enjoy, probably.
Right, sure. I mean, they're very hard on each other,
yeah.
And it's great.
Yeah, and it's interesting, this whole neighborhood, when I first started coming to BAM and just this community, how it's grown in the last 20, 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
You've grown with it, obviously, because you've gone from where you were to where you are now. To watch that blossoming of this community must be encouraging and rewarding.
Well, we didn't work here till 5 years ago when I built this building, but we'd been performing at Brooklyn
right,
Academy of Music since 1984.
Right.
So that's a very long time, and I pretty much had an annual season there every year. And it's just now in the last 5 years that we've been here and really have moved in and are part of the community, which we didn't know how it would work. But we were certainly not rejected. We're very much welcome here, so it's great for us.
And the tax lien has to be a lot less than it would be in Manhattan.
Yeah, exactly.
How is hip-hop, you being a classically driven individual,
mm-hmm.
permeated into the whole experience? Was there a resistance from you initially, or were you always embracing the new forms of music? It's so entrenched in our society now.
What hip-hop is?
Yeah.
Well, sure. I mean, it's been around for 25 years.
Right.
Like my company has, like the early music movement has in, you know, promoting period instrument practices in performing Baroque
right.
music. It's the same age as that. And for people who are waiting for it to turn into something, they missed it.
Yeah, they missed
it. It's been through a whole bunch of phases already. And it's, you know, it's, I don't have a giant collection of music that I listen to from that genre, but you can't miss it, and it's certainly important and certainly a big factor.
So. Well, I think there's a resistance still to maybe classically driven individuals who still don't understand hip-hop culture. They don't understand that it's here, it's arrived,
mm-hmm.
like you said. And maybe they don't look at you know, at it being part of a genre that would even work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's how can you commingle those cultures, I guess is... must be frustrating.
I think if you live in the world, that's taken care of. You know, if you're not hiding, if you live in New York, you see a million different things every day, and that's what's so fun and interesting, and
yeah.
why people either move here forever or run away as fast as they can. So, you know, it's not what I do, but you know, my principal role is choreographer for my company, the Mark Morris Dance Group. I work with classical ballet companies from time to time, and I also work in opera, directing and choreographing. And, you know, I live in the world, and I pay attention, and, you know, I don't have to be an expert on everything, although I am. I don't have to be.
Good. Thank God for that.
Mm-hmm.
What's the biggest misconception, do you think, about dance today?
That depends on what point of view. From choreographers and dancers and people who run dance companies, the biggest misconception is that dance is important in any way. And from the public, the biggest misconception is that people actually do this as a vocation and a job and a calling, and so it's a full-time gig. It's not just something you do till you come up with something better to do. So it's taken not seriously enough by the general public and way too seriously by dance experts. So I prefer not to imagine myself a dance expert.
Very nice answer. Very nice. What do you admire most in the profession in general?
In dance, what I admire most is since it's not a very big field, and it's not a very long career as a performing artist, I admire the dancers who pull it off all the time, who keep doing it. You know, I, for some reason, miraculously, we have health insurance for our dancers, and that's unusual. It's very often a part-time gig with very little performing and a million hours of rehearsal and not much money. So if you're going into dance for the money, it's the wrong job. It's one of those where you only go into it if you must, which sounds sort of romantic and sort of red shoes, and it probably is that, but it's also really, you know if you have to do it, and then you do it. And the fact that people keep on doing it and doing it really, really well and responsibly, and that's the miracle to me, actually.
Yeah, staying healthy, that's a very good point. Mm-hmm. People forget. For you, was the transition from dancer to choreographer a natural? Was there something that made you appreciate that aspect to take the long look and the overview of the experience as a dancer, to be able to make, to put bodies into motion, if you will?
I've always done both things. I made up my first dance that I think is good when I was about 15, and it's still good, and I'm almost 50 now. So really, I'm performing very little now just because I'm old and I don't want to do it so much, and my company's so fabulous that they don't need me around except to sort of run things. And I'm very active doing a lot of choreography and directing, and I didn't become a choreographer instead of being a dancer. They were always concurrent, and now I just do more of one and less of the other. So it's never been a freakish transition for me. And it's the same thing in working in opera. To me, the way I work with music and text, and I've always worked a lot with vocal music, that to move into the opera arena is a very natural and comfortable one for me. It's not suddenly I'm unqualified for the job. I'm just as qualified for that as I am for this. So,
if you weren't doing dance or choreography, would you have been a singer? Would you have pursued that area, the opera perhaps, or pop culture singing?
There's no way for me to know what I would have done, but I imagine myself as an instrumentalist, as like a genius pedal steel guitar player or something like that.
Pedal steel? Who would have guessed?
Who would have guessed?
Although I heard you do a wicked Patsy Cline on karaoke night.
I can, yes. I sing very enthusiastically, and it's not horrible. It's good pitch, but it's not great.
I'm surprised to hear the pedal steel, which is one of my favorite instruments. Mm-hmm. Daniel Lanois' use of the pedal steel is just extraordinary.
Oh yeah.
You know, why did you gravitate towards the pedal steel?
I didn't. You just asked me what I would do.
Okay.
I've never played one in my life. I have no idea. But you know, I think I would. Everyone who sings thinks that he could sing well. Everyone, you know, as I learned from conducting for the first time in my life, just because you think you can do it doesn't mean you can.
Right.
But, you know, pedal steel is a fabulous instrument that's underappreciated, and, you know, so there. Less competition.
How do you think dance could reach a mass audience?
I don't know if I'm that interested. I don't, as I say, my work is for anybody, not for everybody.
You know? Very nice.
So it's like, I don't, if everybody likes everything the same amount, then it's Disney.
Right.
And you've been taught from the cradle to like this and only this, and that people behave this way and only this way. And that's something that I just refuse to accept. So it's not that I take pride in my work being obscure or difficult, because it's not. It's fully interesting and engaging in many ways for many people. But it's not mass hypnotic. You know, it's like, it's not a religion, and it's not a club, and it's not lowest common denominator. So although there's a lot of popular culture that I admire, you know, something like what's that called? Riverdance, mm-hmm. which is to be admired and saluted. I don't really like it that much, but it's incredible that that particular very small point of view of Irish step dancing has become what it is, you know, so hooray for that.
Right.
It's not for me, and I don't need that, but it's needed or it wouldn't exist. But I don't think it's not as cynical as something like, something like a Disney production, which to me are just so odious, I can't tell you.
Well, I was thinking more along the lines like Cirque du Soleil has, you know, mm-hmm. gone to Vegas, and they've co-opted their brand, and now, mm-hmm. you know, let's think about who goes to Vegas. It's not exactly, I mean, a lot of people go to Vegas, mm-hmm. but not exactly patrons of the art as you would think in the New York sense, but it's reached a wider audience in that sense. Movies, you know, mm-hmm. a movie like Take the Lead, which is bringing ballroom right. dancing to a larger arena.
Which was from that wonderful documentary.
Exactly.
Well, here's the thing. If, you know, Las Vegas is for tourists, including American tourists, and as I understand it, you can eat in the best restaurants in the country there, and you can see great works of art on display at the casino gallery, and you can shop like you can shop in Paris and Tokyo. So something's right with that, and if the fact that Cirque du Soleil / Celine Dion are doing these big shows that everybody's going to that cost millions of dollars, and that must be thrilling to some people. It's not to me.
Okay. All right, fair enough.
I, like everybody else, goes to the circus with the idea that maybe someone's going to die, and that is what's exciting, the danger of that. So if you're all attached to bungee cords,
right,
it's not interesting to me.
Very good, very good.
But that's the thing. It's like I don't begrudge that because no one is as good at being Cirque du Soleil as Cirque du Soleil. It's not for me.
That's their brand.
Yeah, and you know, that recent show that was directed by the brilliant director Robert Lepage, you know, I salute that. I think it's brilliant, and hooray, and no thanks.
Will you do Broadway soon again? Tell us about your experience, if you don't mind.
That's a very long story, the Cape Men story.
Yeah.
I went in as choreographer and left as the director who'd just been supplanted by a show doctor. And there were many problems with that show, but for me, it was brilliant, and the music was incredible, the cast was great. I like Paul Simon even better than I did before, after going through this crucible with him. And you know, maybe it was meant to be at BAM instead of on Broadway, and maybe there was hubris, and maybe it was clumsy, and maybe it was also like one of the best shows I've ever dealt with in my life. So we did what we could. It was sunk, some of it in advance, by whatever. I don't know. One could say the media, but Broadway's part of the media. So, you know, it's like, I don't know. It didn't happen. The weeks before it closed, when it should be nobody in the house, was packed with Puerto Rican and Cuban descent people who were coming for the fourth and fifth time to the show because they loved it and everybody's going crazy, and it was fabulous. You know, I don't regret it for a second. It was exhausting, and I wish it had worked better, but, you know, too bad.
You make a good point. Maybe it should have been launched at BAM.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe a lot of shows that don't work on Broadway should, because they're too ambitious right out of the gate.
Well, I approached the piece as an opera because the subject matter didn't require a great deal of dancing.
Right.
So I didn't put a lot of dancing in it. But, you know, something like, I just saw this show that I thought was fantastic and great called Grey Gardens. And, you know, it had a limited run and now it's gone. And it was far, far better than most of the Broadway shows that I see. But, you know, I guess I'm not the demographic. You know, I like other things. So just, you know, I enjoy them. I enjoyed Spam a lot and I enjoyed the producers, but, you know, I like the movies better and it's a lot cheaper. So, you know, I don't know. I'm of several minds about that. And I have a lot of friends who work in that medium, and I may do it again if the right vehicle came up, but it's not my first priority.
Right. And how about in the feature world?
And the
approaching feature films.
Oh, feature world, does that mean film? I never heard that expression.
Yeah, feature films.
Oh. I would do anything if it were just a little bit of work and a great enormous amount of money. Sure. No problem. But, you know, also I'm left cold by most Hollywood movies. I don't like them.
How about Moulin Rouge? A movie like Moulin Rouge, which was so stylized.
It was very well done. Very, very well done. And, you know, it's not my thing.
Okay. All right. Is there any piece of music that you wish you could get the rights to that you can't for whatever reasons, that you'd love to tackle the choreography?
Yes. That's a problem with the rights to performing music. We go through this a lot because I work with live music always. Stravinsky's music is almost impossible to get the rights for. Or it's just so expensive to get the parts and the permission. It's ridiculous, so I don't really do it. Same with Gershwin, the Gershwin Estate, and same with the music of Olivier Messiaen, where I was very keen on choreographing a piece of music of his, and I wasn't allowed to do it by his widow because it's a sacrilege to choreograph to music that was written, I don't know, it's a very holy kind of purple velvet religiosity that I think is just nonsense. So, you know, Messiaen is a very good example, something that I really, really wanted to do, and I just wasn't allowed to, and that's too bad because it would have illuminated this great music.
I didn't realize Stravinsky was so bloody expensive.
Mm-hmm.
When did that become?
Not all of it. There's some things that are in the public domain that are cheap, but they're just coming in now. It's very difficult.
Huh.
But then you do go something like, you go to New York City Ballet, where a lot of this music was written for Balanchine to choreograph.
Right.
And the dances there are in, the Balanchine pieces are in such terrible condition that I don't want to go. And usually the music doesn't sound very good, although the orchestra's gotten better. It's like, wait, the only place, this repository of these great, great collaborations between dance and music, Balanchine and Stravinsky, are done far better by other companies, including the Kirov, and, you know, including other companies in the United States. And it's just a real shame that New York City Ballet has let these Balanchine pieces fall into such disrepair.
Are there any young composers that you've happened upon that really would inspire you?
Young composers? Let's see. I don't know how young.
Or maybe
we
just say contemporary. You know, maybe that's a better example. In any genre.
Well, let's see. I don't know how old he is. I like Kyle Gann's music a lot, and I like this guy from Juilliard. I kind of know his music, named Nico Muhly. And other than that,
did you ever do any Mark Russell pieces?
No, never. I have friends of mine who are more champions of contemporary music than I am, reveal some of these things to me, and I'm very often pleased because I have a big taste for music, and I can't keep track of everything. So somebody like, I get tips from Ethan Iverson, who is the pianist with the Bad Plus, who I love, and you know, I actually commissioned a piece of music from them, so that's pretty recent.
Oh, I didn't know
living
that.
People, and also
they're fabulous. I love
yeah,
them.
They're great, and. Alex Ross, who's the music critic at The New Yorker, just in his blog, I get so much stimulation of music that I should listen to and keep track of because he has a voracious ear and
right.
he has very good taste, I think.
Right. How about in the jazz world, contemporary jazz?
Not really much of anything.
Just the Bad Plus.
Yeah, the Bad Plus. Yeah. And occasionally I'll hear something that I like, but it's not. I don't really seek it out. I don't know. It's been slow coming for me to have an ear for jazz after like 1962 or something,
right.
You know. So,
how about Radiohead? A band like Radiohead, who Bad Plus have covered.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're fine.
Yeah,
it doesn't do much for me.
Doesn't
I've never, yeah. I never really liked rock music.
Okay,
even when I was a teenager, you know, it wasn't for me somehow.
Right. Sure. Sure.
And so, you know, it's like I never went out to groovy discotheques in the late 70s and early 80s, and it never appealed to me.
I never saw you dance at Teria ever?
No, I don't think so, no. And I don't know why. It's not just because I'm not 20. It's because it never appealed to me that
right.
much. It's like too loud and too regular.
Right.
You know, I like a surprisingly long or short phrase every once in a while. I don't think all music has to be in duple time.
Right. Right. Well, how about the world beat music? The Africans, the South Americans, the Portuguese, there's all this wonderful indigenous folk music that's now become in vogue. Maritza in Portugal.
I've been listening to what I call music, that it's now called world music, for my whole life. So, you know, I'm very, very fluent in the musics of India, Indonesia, a certain amount of Balkan music from, you know, the former Yugoslavia and Bulgaria. I love Hawaiian music and Polynesian music. I can listen to and not freak out listening to classical Japanese and Korean music. Those things thrill me, and they have for a long time. So, you know, I'm more likely to like something if it's in a language that I can't understand.
Well, you know, the continent of Africa has many, many...
exactly. Oh, yeah. No, I find myself listening to music from Cote d'Ivoire or from Senegal or from
right.
Mali, and it's very exciting to me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm no expert. I know far more about South Indian music, about Carnatic music. It's just something that I've been listening to for 20 years, so mm-hmm. I'm open.
Okay, great. Well, we cover a lot of it at Culture Catch, so...
Uh-huh, good.
Yeah. How do you unwind...
I don't. I just wind.
You don't meditate or anything?
What do I do? No, I don't. I spend time alone not listening to music. I do that. That's recent. I used to listen to music every waking second. But, you know, now that I'm tired or, you know, if I have time off, I'm less likely to go someplace exotic on an airplane because that's what I do all the time in my job. I cook really well. I have a few friends outside the company, not a lot. I read constantly. I read a lot of poetry, and I read fiction, and I read magazines, and I read, and I watch TV. And a lot of what I do when I'm not working is the same as what I do when I'm working. I'm always reading research for something. I'm always listening to music in some way, not all day. And my friends are often people who are invited or who are involved in the kind of work that I am. So a day off for me and a day on isn't necessarily that different. I might sleep in later or in something. I don't know.
Hallelujah. Right? What's the biggest myth about Mark?
The biggest myth about me is that I'm unserious or that I'm zany. And in fact, I have a really good sense of humor, and I'm pretty, I'm sort of shy, which has been my experience. Everybody in show business is shy in some way. You're making up for something. I think that's it. You know, often people who only know a lot about one thing are surprised to find out that I also know something about that thing. So just the fact that I'm a choreographer and dancer doesn't mean that my only interests are choreography and dance. You know, it's like people think I'm at a concert I'm listening to music in order to make up a dance to it, and that's just not true. There, I have plenty of dances circling the airport that will happen eventually, and I go to music shows because I love them. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what's misunderstood. I'm both mean and nice.
Tough love?
Yeah, I'm good cop, bad cop simultaneously. Yeah.
Okay. You have a good balance there then.
Yes.
What's more fun for you, dancing or running a mini empire?
The most fun for me is actually choreographing a dance, making up a dance in the studio. It's the most frustrating part. It's the part that probably is the hardest on the people who work for me, but it's also the hardest on me. And it's the part of my job that isn't made any easier by having this gorgeous building and hot water and health insurance. You know, that's the difficultest and the interestingest part of what I do, which is the mysterious part of making up a dance, making it go from nothing to something. And once it's finished and released to the public, I still like it and I like to watch it performed, and sometimes I'll, you know, I am always fine-tuning things and I can always give notes, but it's the actual making up of the piece in the room with the dancers is the thing that is unlike anything else that I do and unlike anything else anybody else does also.
When you're watching your piece unfold, are you thinking for specific dancers in your company, or are you thinking about how you would have done it in your youth perhaps, and what you expect that male or female dancer to execute in a movement or in a series of movements?
Well, I have the dancers I do because they're great at doing what they do. They're not intended to imitate me. And the thing is, what I know now, of course, as everyone always says, what you know when you're more mature, you can't do anymore. And maybe that's true, or maybe it's not true. I've learned a lot, I think, over time. And my dancers are brilliant. And so I work very often sort of conceptually and theoretically, and I make up ideas that then they dance. And I'm very, very specific. So although no two people dance the same way, they can be going after the same thing. And that's what pleases me a lot about my company, is that everyone is extremely, they're varied from one another. They're extremely individual, and they're unified in a miraculous way.
When you go outside of your group, your company, and you see a really magnificent dancer, do you make overtures to bring them in? Have you?
Nearly never.
Okay.
Partly because my work in my company is so specifically what we do that it usually takes a year or two for a great dancer to be confident and competent in the style of action that we do. So it's happened occasionally, but you know, usually that I work with other people when I work with classical ballet companies. So there's a whole set of people at San Francisco Ballet that I love to work with that would be terrible in the context of my company, and vice versa. You know, my dancers don't work on point. They do. So I get that out of my system, working with people who are then so happy to see me because I'm temporary, and then I leave and come back here, and then they've missed me here. You know, so it keeps me better appreciated and less loathed if I sort of alternate things a little bit.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, what things in culture are you liking right now outside of the dance world? You say you're a ferocious reader.
Well, Yeah, I read a lot. I read a lot. I don't know. In the culture. I don't know. There's, let's see. I don't know. I get very upset. I watched 24 because I just started watching it. It's so, I don't even understand it. It's like a it's like a very terrifying, you know, graphic novel, as they're called. It's like a terrible, ludicrous comic book that is so outlandish and so nervous-making, and I don't even know what's going on, and it just it leaves me quaking after every night. And I just started watching it. I don't even care about what happened before in the other hours. You know, it's like it's so crazy and so irritating, and yeah, I don't know. Let's see what else is happening.
That's interesting. You mentioned though the graphic novel came to your mind.
Yeah, it's like that's, Watchmen or something.
Yeah, you know, and funny you should. Watchmen was a movie they tried to make for years. They never got it together. I read an early script of that.
Uh-huh.
But the graphic novel has become very much in play in the world of cinema. You know,
right.
David Cronenberg, The History of Violence. He never even read graphic novels when
right.
I interviewed him. I was stunned by that.
Huh.
And I just thought you would just assume that he was a big graphic novel fan
right.
from that. But, I mean, the way that world is just slammed into the film world
right.
and, you know, permeated so much of our culture.
Well, also today, this is another topic. Today I got a couple of handwritten thank you notes from people for, you know, people who'd worked with us or I, you know, I had dinner with somebody or something. But, like, I think that that's coming back. It seems like it is. I mean, I use email and I compose complete sentences and I punctuate and capitalize because I'm now communicating again because I don't like to talk on the phone. So it's like I'm writing letters and they're very brief, but I compose them, you know, and it's good grammar. It's well grammar. And it's something that I really like. And I'm in contact with people that I haven't been or wouldn't be. And then today I'm getting these thank you notes, like, dear Mark, et cetera, you know, sincerely. It's like
handwritten.
Wow, handwritten. It's really amazing.
Fabulous.
I hope
I love
that's
that.
True.
It would be great to get back to letter writing
yeah.
again.
Just occasionally.
Not
it's
use
fun.
A to and a you
yeah,
for
exactly.
you and
mm-hmm.
all yeah, all the lower cases and all the text messaging.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the beauty of this show is that we go deeper. We're not trying mm-hmm. to do the 5-minute pitch us your project, Mark. Although you're more than happy to, we'll take your pitch anytime.
Well, but that's also the thing, you know, I keep track of that, you know, people are downloading, if that's the right term, serious music, and I say that on purpose. I don't just mean classical music. I mean serious music. It's a big deal, and people who are not teenagers are listening to important music and music that is, you know, the smart, cleverly and finely, orchestras are availing their concerts to people online and on, you know, iTunes or whatever. So the fact that nobody's buying records anymore and nobody's going to the symphony anymore doesn't really matter because music thrives. It always finds its way to grow through the cracks in the pavement, and that's wonderful.
But we have to fight the gatekeepers that want to try to monetize the internet
mm-hmm.
because they're destroying what's democratized.
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty is, like you said, you can have 2 million fans of this piece of music and
mm-hmm.
reach them globally through
right.
the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Why curtail that? You know, I mean, this is one of the things that I think a lot of us are going to be very furious if they push this legislation
mm-hmm.
through.
Oh, yes, certainly.
The Clear Channels of the world see the value of, you know, because they've destroyed the beauty of what made the radio so wonderful.
Yeah, radio's over.
Yeah, you don't uh-huh. get classical. You don't even get jazz. New York City doesn't have
right.
a jazz station. I mean, how insane is that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where are you going to hear a Gershwin song or in the classical world or something?
Well, the relief is that we no longer have to listen to Vivaldi's Four Seasons every hour.
Hey, well, yeah, that's true. There are all of these, all of these unknown composers that finally get... finally get their due.
Yeah.
Yeah. Steve on our site is a champion of classical music, and he writes wonderful classical reviews, and he said, you know, this is one of the few sites I'm even given that forum,
mm-hmm.
unless you have your own personal blog, but then who's your audience?
Right.
That's the problem with blogging.
Exactly.
Do you have a blog? I
no.
didn't even ask. Okay.
I don't.
Yeah.
I read a couple, but not.
Yeah.
Most people my age aren't good at it. that they use it sort of as like a journal or something, and
yeah.
it's not that. It's a finer line.
Yeah.
You know, I read Alex Ross's, which is called The Rest is Noise, and it's the right amount of sort of casualness and sort of pièce d'occasion and pensée. And it's so it's a mix of interesting and uninteresting things, but you don't have to read for an hour to figure out if you're interested.
Right.
And it's great.
Yeah.
And I've seen a few like that I really liked.
So. Right. Are there very many actors that can really dance? Have you met many?
Actors who can dance?
Yes.
Well, one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life was a couple years ago, the Worcester Group, which is my favorite theater company in the world, did a piece based verbatim on some work of William Forsythe, the choreographer. And one of the actors portrayed Mr. Forsythe, and three or four of the others portrayed the Frankfurt Ballet, his company at that time. And they danced because that was the role, and they're not dancers. And it was the most convincing, beautiful, poignant, funny, scary show I've seen in a long time. And it was them dancing because that was the assignment. So it was unabashed and unfiltered and very, very serious. And it was a miracle. It was the most legitimate, sort of honest kind of dancing I'd seen in a long time.
Fantastic.
The miraculous Worcester Group.
Yeah. Good for you. How about PS122 and programs like that and what they're doing with the arts?
I'm all for it. I never go to PS122. I very rarely.
Right.
And I'm hooray for them. I'm all for it. I'm all for everything.
Right.
I prefer stuff that's really good and interesting and engaging and done seriously.
Right.
You know? but I don't go to everything. And
I can't imagine you have time.
No, I don't have time.
For much of anything, really.
But also, you know, I work on dances all day long, and sometimes that's not what I want to do when I get off of work.
Right.
But I'm all for it. The more, the better. That's what I say.
Right. Walk us through, for someone who is uninitiated in the world of dance, what it takes to mount something, start to finish. You come up, conceptualize a piece. You have an idea of some music that you want to use.
Oh, no, it doesn't work that way. It works the way that I find a piece of music that I love and can't live without and can imagine listening to hundreds of times, if not more. So the sequence is usually I find a piece of music and I get the score for it and I listen a lot and then I listen and read the score and then I stop listening and just read the score and then I stop looking at the score. And when I know it enough. And then I come in prepared with my knowledge of having analyzed it for my own use, analyzed a piece of music, and I come in and meet the dancers who work for me full time and say, go like this, and show them some move, and then I change that and work on it for, I don't know, 6 weeks, 2 months, for maybe 4-ish hours a day. We do other things. I can't work on a new dance all day because it's not productive. And during that time, everyone learns it, even if it's going to be a solo or a duet, all 16, 18 people in my company learn everything so that I then make up the dance with these sort of blocks of action that I decided on. And meanwhile, the costume, lighting, and sometimes set designers are listening to the same music as I am and coming up with notions that aren't necessarily related to what I'm doing. And then we all sort of get together and put on the show, really.
Put on the show. Let's put on the show, gang.
We too put on the show.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. Finally,
but the thing is, that can take, from finding a piece of music to the performance, can take 2 months or, you know, 15 years, depending on what it is. And, if you know, the scale, the timing, the budget, the personnel, all of these things. You know, if I have 5 co-producers on a big opera project, that takes longer and it's more expensive. And, you know, or sometimes I'll say, I have to make up a new dance. I'm tired of this one, and I'll just do it right away. So I have the freedom to do that, and that's a great treasure.
Now, you mentioned earlier, Mark, that you said your piece that you wrote, that you choreographed at 15, still holds up today. Is that your favorite piece? Is it fair for me to ask, do you have a favorite piece, something you would like to be known for, or is it your whole body of work?
I'd rather be known for being a really good choreographer and my whole life's work, which is fine. People cite this piece, L'Allegro il Penseroso ed il Moderato, which is to this big Handel oratorio, and it might be the best piece I'll ever make up. It also is really long. It's in a form that I'm not doing right now, and it was done with the extraordinary time and money support of living in Brussels. So it would be impossible to do something on that scale here and now. But I also, you know, that was 15 years ago, and it's a gorgeous, beautiful piece that we love to do, and everybody loves to watch it. And I don't suffer from masterpiece syndrome, so otherwise I would have quit at some point, probably after my first good dance. So I make up new stuff all the time. That's my interest. And if people, you know, feel nostalgic about the old work, we do that too. And if you know you don't like what I do now, you know, stay home.
Lastly, how would you like to be remembered?
Oh, it doesn't matter to me. It's not my business. You mean after, when I die?
After I die, I don't care
what happens. You know, I hope that some people in my company can make some money off of my dances for a few years before they see through, before they see that it's all, you know, air. As far as reputation goes, I don't care. I'm not really nostalgic. I don't know. That's pretty ignoble. I don't know. I always thought that I would like to be buried, my ashes, my remains be buried in a speed bump on a major highway so that people have to slow down to 20 and curse me as they go over and then speed up again. I think that would be a fitting tribute.
Movement.
Mm-hmm.
That's very good. Very good movement. Mark, thank you so much for being on the Culture Catch.
Sure.
Really appreciate it. I don't know if there's anything else you'd like to add to enlighten.
Is there also culture release? Do you have culture catch and release?
Oh, you always have to have the release.
Okay, good.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank today's sponsors, WebHSP.com. For all of your web hosting needs, it's WebHSP.com. And our friends at Final Draft. If you've got a script, they've got a solution. FinalDraft.com. This is Dusty Wright for the Culture Catch. We'll see you soon. Converge is the word.